Welcome to Healthy Vision. I'm your host, Dr. Val Jones. This show is brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors. At night, it's harder to see as clearly as we do during the day. This and many other factors contribute to the alarming statistic that you are 3 times more likely to be involved in a fatal accident while driving at night. Last year, I had the opportunity to talk with John Ulcheski of the National Safety Council, as well as optometrist Dr. Christina Schneider, who both shared some eye-opening statistics about what happens on the roads in low-light conditions and offer driving tips to help you reach your destination safely. Because this is such an important topic, we felt it was important to re-air this podcast. With the end of daylight savings approaching on November 3rd, it's critical for drivers to be aware of the differences between driving at night and during the day. Welcome to Healthy Vision. I'm your host, Dr. Val Jones. This show is brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors. You may not be conscious of it, but when you're behind the wheel of a car, your eyes are constantly on the move. You look at other vehicles in front, behind, and to the side of you, at road traffic signs, rear and side view mirrors, and inside your vehicle at the speedometer, global navigation system, or radio. When it's dark, these tasks can become much more difficult for some drivers. The end of daylight savings time means more hours of darkness, so today we'll talk with optometrist Dr. Christina Schneider about some common vision problems, such as night blindness, and how they can impact driving in the dark. We'll also be speaking with John Ulcheski of the National Safety Council, who will share some eye-opening stats about what happens on the roads in low-light conditions and offer some tips for driving at night. According to a nationwide survey conducted on behalf of Road and Travel magazine and AccuView brand contact lenses, nearly one of every three drivers say they have difficulty seeing all or most of the time while driving in the dark. Dr. Christina Schneider, Senior Director Medical Affairs for Vistacon, Division of Johnson & Johnson Vision Care, joins us to explain what happens to our eyes during driving and what we can do to improve our night vision. Dr. Schneider, I read that a driver with 20/20 vision during the day may experience a reduction of visual acuity up to 20/40 at night. So what happens to our eyes when it gets dark?
Well, the biggest change is that the pupil, the circle in the middle of the eye that lets in light, gets bigger. And the eye is very much like a camera. When the aperture or the opening is big, your focus has to be really accurate. And at night, because there's not as much really to focus on, sometimes the eye kind of wanders around a little bit and doesn't know exactly where to focus. So this can result in images being a lot blurrier than they would be if the light was nice and bright and your pupil was small.
What are some of the common problems that affect our eyes while driving at night?
You know, it's a little bit age dependent. The focusing changing from distance to near is difficult. So if you have to look at a dashboard to distance, sometimes that's a little bit more difficult, especially for people over 40. We have a condition called night myopia, which means that at night, because there's not so much to really focus directly on, the eyes tend to kind of pull in until they find something to lock onto. Very often that's the windshield or the windscreen. So you might see bug splat or raindrops, and it's really hard to make your eyes leave that focus. So you're not really attending to what you should be attending to, which is what is, you know, several hundred yards or meters down the road.
And we see color differently at night too, don't we?
Right. When you're looking straight ahead, the very, very center of your vision is the only part of your eye that really sees color. Side vision is mostly motion. So at night, when you're looking straight ahead and the object is in light, you can see the color, but you're not going to see colors off to the side. So it requires more head and eye movement to really recognize the color of the road signs. A yellow sign, when it's off to the side, won't look yellow at night. So you have really different search patterns than you do in the daytime.
So you mean it's important for you to, you know, scan left and right even more than in the daytime?
Right, and when you are wearing certain types of glasses or contact lenses, that may change the performance. So, for example, if you're wearing what we call progressive spectacles for people who need bifocals or need reading glasses, when you look off to the side in those, you can have very distorted vision. So to see well, you have to actually turn your entire head. When you wear contact lenses, if you have astigmatism, some lenses don't keep up with your eyes as well. So again, these are just challenges that at night are magnified relative to driving in the daytime.
So over time at night, sometimes people start getting fatigue and headaches and things like that. Have you noticed people complaining of that to you?
Right, because you know the eye tries very hard to see, and so when it faces a condition where things aren't perfectly clear, it's going to start moving around. Very often people start squinting, or they might change their head or neck posture a little bit. So that can result in headaches. It can result in blurry or sometimes even double vision. And then the other thing inside the car, very often we're driving either with heating or air conditioning, and that wind will also dry your eyes out. And we tend to not blink when we're concentrating. So all of those things put together can create a lot of visual discomfort and physical discomfort while driving.
Is there anything we can do to minimize those symptoms?
Making a conscious effort to blink, taking frequent rest breaks, not driving for hours at a time without braking, wearing the best correction that you can. Some people think they can get by without driving with glasses or contact lenses during the day, but it's even more important at night to be very well corrected.
Now, you mentioned night or nocturnal myopia. I wondered if, you know, certain people are more susceptible to that and if it's treatable.
Interesting question about night myopia, because it's very hard to test for in an exam room because it requires a really, really dark environment, and that's not how we usually test. My mom was a great example. When I was going to school, she used to wear three pairs of glasses around her neck because she had night myopia. So she had a special pair that she wore for distance driving, especially at night. She had a different pair that she wore for every day. And then she had a third pair that she used for her reading and her sewing. And I remember used to tell her not to let people know that her daughter was actually an optometry student because I would be so embarrassed. They actually make kinds of glasses that sort of combine all of those three things together. But a lot of times the night myopia corrections almost trial and error. So the best thing is to talk to your doctor and just explain the problems you're having, and then they can work with you to come up with an option that's best for you.
Now, we've talked about what it's like to drive at night, but are there problems that people have at dusk as well?
Yes, when the light's changing, your eyes get a little bit confused, and very often at that time, the sun is lower in the sky, so you may also be bothered by some of that dazzle. They make sunglasses that actually change. They're called photochromics. They get lighter and darker. Sometimes those work really well for those in-between times, and it's a little bit of a trade-off of making sure that you have something that's going to block some of that brightness and light, but it's not so dark that you're losing reaction time. So that in-between time is an important time to just stop and think a little bit about, you know, maybe even just raise your glasses up and check to see which is better, because it's very confusing for your brain, and there's no single solution that really is going to work for everybody. So just be aware that that's a tricky time to be driving.
So that's what happens when it gets dark. Now, I want to talk about what happens when we get older. I read a statistic that starting at age 20, the amount of light needed to drive doubles every 13 years. So by my calculations, you know, by the time a person is about 60, they'll need 10 times as much light as a 19-year-old to see clearly. What's happening to our eyes as we get older?
We talked about at night that typically your pupil gets larger, and that's to let in more light. But unfortunately, with aging, there's a process that is actually creating a smaller pupil size. So the small pupil size is a reason why older drivers need a lot more light, because they just don't have as big of an opening. So you compensate typically by slowing down, because the amount of light is really directly related to how clear the image is and how quickly your brain can respond. So the reduction of pupil size is really the issue around the loss of light. And that's a very natural consequence of aging.
And I think things happen to our lenses, too, as we age, right?
Absolutely, yes. So even in a healthy eye, you have some changes in optics. And as we age, the lens inside the eye that helps us focus, it keeps putting on layers. And as a result, the lens gets a little bit less flexible, so we don't go from near to far as easily. It also gets a little bit more yellow, which at night causes more problems than it does in the day. And if you go a little bit farther and start having cataracts, which is a cloudiness of a lens, that means the light can actually be kind of bouncing around and scattered more inside the eye, and all of those things make seeing at night much more difficult.
So what's the experience of a person as they grow older and they have more challenges adapting to low light conditions?
Well, the best example that I can give is when you walk into a dark movie theater. So your friend has gone in ahead and saved you a seat, and you walk in, and when you first get in there, you really can't see anything. And then after just a couple of minutes, your eyes adjust to the light, and then all of a sudden you can pick out everybody. So that's kind of what they're experiencing. It just takes them longer to react to things at night.
Are people with astigmatism more sensitive to light?
Yes, astigmatism is one of the conditions that I think is most overlooked when people are getting well corrected. Many contact lens wearers have lenses that don't perfectly well correct for astigmatism. And what astigmatism does, it actually kind of creates two points of focus. And again, during the daytime when your pupil's small, it's not a big deal. At nighttime, though, the larger pupil means that all the optical defects are magnified. And people may find that they see either a slight doubling or halos or streamers off of lights, and it can be extremely distracting, particularly at night. So having astigmatism corrected in both glasses and contact lenses is a very important part of seeing well in the evening and night hours.
What's the risk of driving with an undercorrected or uncorrected vision problem, and what are some of the available options and treatments that we have to improve our night vision?
The trade-off for miscorrection, whether it's not wearing a correction you should or not having a perfectly current correction, really is reaction time. So when you don't see as well, you have to get closer, so you either need to drive more slowly or you need to take more time. And if people don't account for that need for extra time or distance, then they're really putting themselves at risk, you know, for accidents and close calls. Doctors have a number of really amazing new technologies that they can offer to patients. So in glasses, we have polarized lenses, anti-reflection coatings that keep, especially at night, some of those reflections away. There's lots of different designs for different kinds of prescriptions. In contact lenses, we have lenses for astigmatism. We have lenses that combine extra moisture so they don't dry out as much in some of those situations where you might have air conditioning or heating blowing on your eyes. Acuvue Oasys for astigmatism, for example, is a combination of that moisture-rich technology and a really amazing stable design for astigmatism. So that's an example of some new technology in contact lenses. And the most important thing is just to ask your doctor what things are out there that are new. Tell them what symptoms you're experiencing, what problems you have while you're driving at night, and let them work with you to find the best option in either glasses or contact lenses, because there are lots of them out there.
Dr. Schneider, thanks so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure.
You're listening to Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones, brought to you by Acuvue, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors. According to traffic safety experts, the motor vehicle fatality rate at nighttime is 3 times higher than the daytime rate. Headlight glare and decreased visibility of signs and reflectors are contributing factors to these accidents. The National Safety Council saves lives by preventing injuries and deaths at work, in homes and communities, and on the roads through leadership, research, education, and advocacy. By 2014, the council will save an additional 10,000 lives and prevent 1 million injuries. John Yulcheski, Group Vice President, Strategic Initiatives for the National Safety Council, was the principal architect of the council's policies and strategies that made it the first national organization to call for a total ban on all cell phone use while driving. He joins us today to talk about safety on the road. John, how does nighttime driving affect reaction time?
Well, it affects it because our vision is affected, first of all. Our visibility, our ability to see in the distance, see a pedestrian or see another vehicle, our peripheral vision, our ability to see things around us, and contrast of objects at night, all of those things are reduced. So all of those affect our ability to see things as quickly as we do during the daytime, and so our reaction time is significantly affected. And I would tell you that I can't give you one number because it really depends on the person. It depends a lot on the age of the person. It depends on the visual ability of the person anyway in daytime. But it certainly is a significant factor, and it's a significant factor for everyone in different ways, depending on their normal vision.
Now, John, I read a statistic that 25% of travel occurs during hours of darkness and 49% of fatal crashes occur at night. Why is driving in the dark so dangerous?
Well, it's really a couple things. First of all, it's the visibility issues that I mentioned. And secondly, it's really a misperception of risk. So you have a more risky situation driving at night because of the visibility problems. It's much more difficult to see people, to see other vehicles at night, yet people don't change their driving habits. They drive the same way generally during the daytime at night, and they do at night. And so what happens is you have a greater risk, inability to stop as quickly, slower response time, poor vision, but people don't accommodate for that or adjust for that by slowing down and giving themselves more room between vehicles or driving slower. They just misperceive that it is a much more risky situation. So what you have is people driving the same way at night as they do during the day in a more risky situation. It's going to lead to more crashes.
Now, when I'm driving at night, I have to say the glare from the headlights coming at me really bothers me. I was wondering if there's anything I can do to lessen that glare.
Yes, there is. The first thing you should do is really not look directly at the glare of the oncoming headlights and keep your eyes sort of above the headlights, if you will. You want to keep your eyes moving across the roadway so you can see things, not only oncoming vehicles on the left side of you, but also parked cars or cars pulled off to the right or pedestrians that might be crossing in front of you. So you need to really keep your eyes moving and try not to keep your eye fixed on that glare for more than just a fleeting moment.
Now, some of the headlights seem worse than others. Is that just me or are they worse than others?
Yeah, certainly they are. Anybody who drives at night has been blinded by another vehicle. And when you are being blinded by another vehicle, almost every time it is because that vehicle's lights are not properly adjusted. They need to be adjusted properly. People could probably do it themselves, and they can certainly look it up in terms of how to do it in their garage. But the easiest way would be to take it to your mechanic and have them adjust your lights. But here's the way you would know. If you're driving at night and you see your left headlight going out broadly up into the other lane of traffic, and on a dark street, that your headlights are spread out too far to the left and not just on the roadway in front of you, then your headlights probably need to be looked at.
How common is that problem?
That's very common. We think more than half of all vehicles are driving around with improperly adjusted headlights. They were certainly adjusted properly when the vehicle was purchased, but unless you specifically ask for it to be checked, it may not be checked. And certainly if a car is badly out of alignment, for example, a mechanic might say, boy, I better check the headlights because the car is badly out of alignment. But little things, but running over bumps or whatever might knock a headlight out of alignment and could be causing a problem for your fellow motorists.
Now, driving at night is difficult for most of us, and it's even more difficult, it seems, for teenagers. They really struggle. I read that the per-mile crash rate for teenage drivers is 3 times higher after 9 p.m. than during the day. Why is that?
First of all, teenagers have the same kinds of visibility problems that adults do, so they have that to start with. But secondly, they are inexperienced at driving at night. So while adults might have the same visibility problems, they have dealt with it before, and they have a certain, perhaps, way that they use their eyes and move their eyes around. They may have greater awareness and understanding of the dangers. Teens don't have that. So teens don't appreciate the increased risk at all, and they are inexperienced driving at night. So if they're going to drive the same way, then you not only have the increased risk, but you've also got just the increased crash risk of the teen themselves because they're an inexperienced driver and inexperienced driving at night. Add to that other things that happen at night and situations that happen at night that are greater than during the day. There's more alcohol use at night than there is during the day. Not necessarily for teens, but teens are on the roads with people who are using alcohol, and so their ability to drive more safely around other people who may be driving erratically is also affected. Teens, not as experienced drivers, so they're not as experienced at driving around other drivers who may not be driving appropriately.
And teens also like to text and use cell phones, don't they?
They sure do. They are the group most likely to text while driving, although the people in their 20s are gradually catching up with that. People in their 30s also. And I think texting and reading email is something that people of any age are now doing. However, teens are the group that says they're most willing to do it, and they're the group most likely to be in a crash in perfect situations. So it's really a perfect storm where you have a teen, inexperienced driver, driving at night in a risky situation, and then add the significant increased risk of talking on a phone or texting, and you really have a recipe for a crash.
Now, John, you've been a real advocate of banning all cell phone use while driving. And some people think, you know, well, I have a hands-free set, so that should solve it, right? And what do you say to those people?
Well, they're fooling themselves, frankly. They are not necessarily understanding what the real risk is. The risk is not where your hands are, it's where your head is. And while driving one-handed and holding a phone is not the safest thing that one can do, that's not where the crashes are being caused. The crashes are being caused by a lack of attention of people called cognitive distraction, where their brains are being distracted by the conversation or particularly by the texting. And it is that distraction of their brain that's causing them to miss traffic signals, to not see vehicles around them, to not stay with the flow of traffic, to drive erratically. And I think all of us at this point in time have probably seen and know when we are driving around someone who's talking on a phone. We can tell. How can we tell? Because of the things I just mentioned. They're not keeping with the flow of traffic. They're missing traffic signals. They're more likely to run stop signs. They're more likely to run red lights, not see pedestrians. It's that cognitive distraction that's really the greater concern rather than the one hand on the phone.
Now, why does that happen when we're on cell phones rather than just talking to a passenger in the car?
Well, for adults, passengers actually adjust their conversation with the flow of traffic. And adults actually, in most cases, particularly when they're in the front seat, are actually safety benefits. So that front seat driver who says, watch out or look out or tells you about what's going on around you is a safety benefit. You don't have that safety benefit when you're talking to someone on a cell phone. They don't know that you're about to merge into traffic, and they're yelling at you anyway or engaged in a heavy conversation about something. They don't know the traffic situation you're in. And when your brain switches on to focus primarily on that conversation, your brain has essentially switched off of its primary focus on driving. So the reaction time goes down dramatically when that happens.
Wow. And so, you know, eating a sandwich, for example, is actually much safer than having a cell phone in your hand.
For most experienced drivers, that is absolutely true because you don't have to think about eating the sandwich. Your brain isn't really actively engaged in thinking about something and responding to something in a normal conversation.
Well, I guess we shouldn't use cell phones in cars anymore.
Well, the National Safety Council developed this policy over 2 years ago, and we're an organization of business members, and businesses realize that they can't expose their employees to that kind of risk. They would not expose their employees to that measure of risk in their workplaces, in their factories, in their warehouses, even in their offices. So why would they expose their employees to that kind of risk out on the roads? And that's why many employers have already put total cell phone bans in their companies to protect their employees while they're on the job.
I wanted to go back to the teens again. And, you know, other than teaching them not to use their cell phones when they're driving, what else can we do to help them become better nighttime drivers?
Spend a lot of time doing it. A parent should spend many hours with their teen, sitting in the front seat, letting the teen drive at night, first of all in comfortable, familiar surroundings, and then gradually expanding their boundaries. And that should be many hours before the parent would ever allow the teen to drive at night themselves. A parent should see the teen in many different driving situations at night, starting with quiet residential streets and gradually expanding to busy expressways at night, before the parent would ever allow the teen to go out into those circumstances by themselves. And I mean many times in the same kinds of situations, so that the parent is comfortable and confident that the teen is experienced enough to handle it. Many states require 10 hours of practice driving at night. I would consider that to be a minimum, and a parent has really got to be the best judge of, okay, I have now been with my teen X number of hours in all kinds of driving situations. I'm comfortable and confident that they're driving at night. Unfortunately, most teens in this country don't get that kind of practice before they get their driver's license. And once they get their driver's license, the parents too often declare victory and think that the driver's license is the end of their learning, when it really should just be the middle of their learning. Teens should really still be learning from their parents and practice driving with their parents really until at least age 18. So simply practice is the best advice I could give.
John, earlier we were talking with Dr. Schneider about how the eyes change as we age, and she let us know that 60-year-olds require about 10 times more light to see than a 20-year-old, and I thought that was fascinating. How does that affect their driving at night?
It's going to dramatically affect their reaction time. It's going to dramatically affect when they see pedestrians or other vehicles. And the amount of time that it takes to stop in any time at certain speeds is probably going to be greater than they're going to have time to if they're driving at normal speeds. For example, at 55 miles an hour, it takes about 320 feet to stop reaction time. But with the vision of a normal adult, where you might see a pedestrian at 300 feet, and that's a pedestrian who's dressed in white with reflective clothing, for example, you aren't going to have enough time to stop at night, because you're not going to see them as quickly. A 60-year-old would probably be even more impaired, and so it's even more important to slow down, drive significantly slower at night than you would during the day, recognizing that your vision is impaired, and leave greater following distances, because that car that stops in front of you, while it may seem like it is not that far in front of you, you're going to need more time to stop at night because you're simply not seeing those brake lights as quickly.
That's right. And it's just a natural part of aging, and which is going to happen to all of us. It's just something to be aware of.
Yep.
Now, I was thinking about it being dark at night, and then what happens if it's also raining or snowing? What can we do about bad weather?
Well, it's certainly similar kinds of problems. Your vision is impaired, but also the road conditions are going to be impaired. So your ability to stop, for example, in snow or rain, again, goes down dramatically. And so the two things, speed following distance, and then I would add defensive driving to that, and just how you're driving needs to adjust with the road conditions. You should not be driving at the same speeds. You should not be driving with the same following distance. And you really need to pay attention for the other guy, because they may not be able to stop as quickly, or they may be stopping and sliding into your lane. And certainly fog is a significant problem for visibility, and you really have to be able to stop within the range of your headlights in a foggy situation, because if you had to stop suddenly, you probably wouldn't have enough time to do it in many situations.
So the rule of thumb is that you need to be able to stop within the range of your headlights?
Right. And when you're driving at 55 miles an hour on a foggy expressway, you're not going to be able to do that. And so you're going to have to adjust your speed. While you might drive that expressway every day at 55 miles an hour, in the fog, you probably should be driving about half that.
And should people put their emergency blinkers on at some point?
If you are driving below the minimum speed on a road, then yes, you should have your emergency blinkers on. So, for example, on an expressway, minimum speed is 45. Once you drop below that, you should have your emergency flashes on so that others know that you are not driving the minimum speed. In normal street traffic, urban traffic, no, you do not need to be putting your emergency blinkers on. You don't need to add any more lights that might be confusing to other motorists, particularly in a foggy situation.
Now, John, do you have any special advice for truckers who are driving at night?
Well, the most important thing for truckers driving at night is fatigue. The real issue for truckers, because of the number of hours that they drive, and they do drive at night a lot, is really fatigue. When people have been up all day, or they put in a day's work, and then they're driving at night, both their bodies and their minds are tired. And truckers are in a job where they are doing the same thing, repetitive and redundant, and they've driven the same roads. And so their sensitivity to risky situations kind of gets dulled a little bit, and it gets even more dulled at night. And so they really need to be aware of their body and their fatigue and make sure that they are two things. One, getting enough sleep, and two, recognizing fatigue and getting off the road before they get too tired to be driving.
What advice do you have for pedestrians and cyclists at night so that drivers can see them better?
I mentioned the contrast problems, and it's really important that pedestrians dress themselves in a way that provides contrast and reflectivity. And so, for example, wear light colors. Wear white if you're going to bicycle at night or walk at night. And wear reflective tape. And be specific about where you put that reflective tape. Put it on parts of your body that are going to be moving. Put it on your bicycle in a place that's going to be moving, because the movement of the reflective tape will better the chances of you being seen earlier. If I'm walking or jogging, I might put it on the back of my thighs. I might put it on my back of my arms or my elbows, not necessarily just in the middle of my back. I want to get it on body parts that are going to be moving while I'm walking. The same is true with a bicycle. You want to put it in areas where it can be seen and use it liberally. Don't just put one or two pieces on, but put it in different parts of your body and different parts of the bicycle.
Now, I have to ask, if you're out at night walking your dog, how do you keep the dog safe?
Well, I would put reflective tape on the dog. For example, we have reflective tape on the dog's collar. With the dog moving around, it's just a good habit to get into. Get some reflective tape and wrap it all the way around the dog's collar when you take them out at night.
That's a great tip. Now, I talked earlier with Dr. Schneider about how to take better care of our eyes when we're driving, but I wondered if you have some tips about how to take better care of our car to improve our nighttime driving skills?
Well, first of all, a couple of safety tips. You know that your reaction time is going to be different at night. You know your visibility is going to be different at night. You know that it's going to take longer to stop at night, so your following distance should be greater at night than it is during the day. Certainly, always you should drive defensively, because you have to be more attentive at night because, frankly, the statistics are clear. There are more drivers around you that are impaired at night than there are during the day, so you need to drive more defensively. You need to really turn on your headlights earlier, early twilight, when you may think there's enough light. It really needs to be on earlier, and some car companies have actually made their lights on all the time, and that's been shown to actually make a difference. And use your high beams with care. You talked about the glare. Sometimes that glare is coming from high beams, and people should not be using high beams when other cars are around you. As far as taking care of your car, really the key things are to make sure that your windows and mirrors are all very clean so that you're not getting any kind of dirt or anything that's going to give you glare or affect your vision. And certainly, as I mentioned, make sure that your headlights are adjusted properly.
John, those are great tips. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
The National Safety Council saves lives by preventing injuries and deaths at work, in homes and communities, and on the roads. You can learn more about making your life safer by visiting their website at www.nsc.org. That's www.nsc, like National Safety Council, .org. You've been listening to Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones, brought to you by AccuView, the brand of contact lenses most trusted by eye doctors.
Healthy Vision with Dr. Val Jones is a copyright of Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated, 2012. Dr. Jones is a paid consultant for Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated. Dr. Christina Schneider is Senior Director, Medical Affairs for Vistacon, Division of Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated. As with all contact lenses, a prescription is required. Rare but serious eye problems can develop. Ask your eye doctor about proper wear and care and whether contact lenses are right for you. For more information on AccuView brand contact lenses, go to AccuView.com. AccuView, AccuView Oasys, and Vistacon are trademarks of Johnson & Johnson Vision Care Incorporated.